This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
And when we say worse, we mean worse. Like, we try to find the absolute worst ideas on the internet.
I mean, the internet is full of good ideas, so this seems like a difficult task, but we try.
Yes. It is. It's all about finding that, like, one out of every 1,000 ideas on the internet that is bad. The rest of them are just, like, sterling examples of good judgment and common sense.
Yeah.
But every now and then.
That's my experience, at least. No, it's not.
Yeah, I was like, Sarah, can I get a list of the websites that you visit? Because that's a very different story.
The Google Doodle and nothing else.
Yeah. Well, that over there with the Google Doodle is Sarah Shackett.
Hello.
I am sitting here with her and Zach Valenti.
Hello.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and we are the No Bad Ideas team. Every week we find a terrible, terrible idea that somebody at some point went, hey, this is a good idea. And then they did it, and it had the same terrible consequences that anyone would expect it would have. And we take those ideas and we try to turn them into a good story, in, or at least into the pitch for a good story, in just 30 minutes.
That is what makes it fun, the time crunch.
The frenetic race against time aspect of it all.
And this week, Zach.
I have brought one of the worst ideas I've ever seen. And
oh,
it is unfortunate. I mean, it is hard to top shark napping.
Which last week we had a terrific bad idea about some folk who stole a shark out of an aquarium through a baby stroller. And if you have not listened to that, that's
episode 11. Amazing. But I think I found a good follow-up.
Okay, great.
And
where did you find this follow-up?
So I put on a hazmat suit.
Oh, God.
And I went diving into the treacherous, fiery depths of the Daily Mail.
Great.
I fought my way through terrible clickbait ads and pop-ups and other junk, and found this from the Heathrow Airport.
This
is just a few hours ago.
Great. And guys, if you want to check this out, like, check out the episode description and you'll find a link there too.
Yes.
And more than most, this is a visual one. So you're going to want to check this out. It is something special. If you like really, really, well, I'm just going to read this.
Just like get it over with.
All right. So here's the headline. When you're running late for work and you forgot your keys, pilot is filmed at Heathrow climbing through passenger jet window.
Wait. So that's like when you forget your keys, like colon or something, like it is.
So what you're missing is, yeah, so it's like, quote, when you forget your keys, colon, pilot is filmed at Heathrow climbing through passenger jet window. And what you're missing is the photo right underneath the headline of a just picture on a tarmac.
Yeah.
A plane.
I assume it's not a moving plane.
Not a moving plane. It's like one of those docky thingies. But like out of the window of the front of the plane is a man with one leg hanging in the airplane and the rest of his body out of the airplane. It is very unclear what's going on here, except that maybe he's sneaking into the plane.
Or out of it. It's unclear.
All right, Zach. Why don't you clarify this for us, please?
A pilot was spotted trying to climb through a window of a plane after he forgot his keys in a hilarious clip.
Which keys?
To the plane?
I'm sure that there's more than one.
Don't you have co-pilots for a reason?
Yeah. Like,
Oh, man. Oh, it's so good. He's definitely trying to get into the plane. And, it looks so painful.
And, there should only be...
of the full video. Oh, it looks so uncomfortable.
But is there anything more to the article?
Oh, yeah, there's so much more.
Please.
Footage of the incident, which took place at Terminal 2 in Heathrow Airport, shows the clumsy pilot trying to dangerously maneuver his body into the tiny window.
Movie title.
The clumsy pilot.
the pilot, who has not been identified, can be seen with one leg in the cockpit as he desperately tries to balance himself on a wobbling platform.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
But the platform starts to move, and the pilot tries in vain to free his leg as he dangles out the window uncomfortably.
Worst game of Twister ever.
He reaches his hand inside and even tries to stick his head in before another pilot comes to help. A British Airways pilot posted the hilarious clip on Twitter with the caption, "When you're running late for work and you forgot your keys." The video, which has already been viewed more than 12,000 times on social media, shocked and amused users. One user wrote, "Excuse the maybe obvious question, but do aircraft have keys?"
Yeah.
Another user said, "I'll venture to say this is only done when the bulletproof door gets locked and you can't remember the code." Another user wrote, "That looks very uncomfortable."
Right.
And indeed, it really, really does. And then there's some key moments.
Oh, dear.
Captions. So this one looks like he's falling. Like, the one leg is no longer on the platform. The other leg is deeply in the aircraft.
Oh, my God.
The pilot, who has not been identified, can be seen with one leg in the cockpit as he desperately tries to balance himself. Oh, yeah. This is just from the article. I'm just going to skip down to the bottom. Okay. It looks like that is all. We don't have any other information on this. It is a emerging story.
So let me see if I understood.
Emerging story. Anyway.
What was presented to me. Set a timer. Let's get cracking on this.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a title, so we're halfway home.
Yeah.
And...
You thought that Sully was a movie about an airplane pilot that had problems? Wait until you see.
No, I'm thinking about the Denzel, what was it, Flight?
Go. Flight, yeah.
No, just imagine that, except he's half outside the plane.
Okay, so again, let me see if I understood this correctly. So.
There's a plane, it's at... Heathrow
Terminal 2.
Terminal 2. And it is docked. So, like, the docking collar is connected.
Yep.
Presumably, people are getting on or off this plane.
However, or, like, at least, like, waiting. Like,
yes.
Soon there will be some getting on.
This plane needs to go somewhere.
The boarding door has not been shut.
Yes. The pilot arrives. We don't really know why, but the pilot... sort of looks at, like, the regular door and goes, "This is inaccessible to me."
Yes.
Or, "This is insufficient for me. I'm having a really fucking metal day. And so I need to have a really fucking metal way to get into this aircraft." And so he's like, "Fuck the regular door. I'm gonna climb outside the plane."
Wait, I don't know that we ever settled. Is he climbing in the plane?
He's definitely climbing into the plane.
Okay. So he, like... parkoured his way down the docking collar to get into the plane.
Right, like he somehow ends up on the runway and then like uses like a platform to raise himself up to like the window of the cockpit of the flight deck.
And that is correct.
I'm a little
alarmed.
And one
second, like those windows open? Like,
yeah,
there's like
that's my question. It's like I'm a little alarmed.
That was
those
the shocking thing.
Open.
Yeah.
Without
those
a key?
Yeah, like those.
From
like,
the outside?
Okay. I'm going to propose a logical solution, and then we should disregard it and find something fun.
Please.
But, like, probably this is a pilot who, you know how the flight attendants always say, you know, check your bags, make sure you have all of your luggage.
Right, all your belongings.
All your belongings before you leave the plane, because the plane is going to go somewhere else. This pilot did not take that advice. And he, like, flew into Heathrow, probably realized that he forgot... like his wallet or his keys in the cockpit of the plane that is about to leave to go like to New York City or whatever, like about to like be on the other side of the Atlantic, and does a mad scramble to get back into the cockpit of this plane so that he can get his belongings. This is my logical attempt, like my attempt at logic rather.
But once again, I'm just like, there has to be an easier way.
There has to be, yeah.
Right. Like, this seems more time consuming than the normal way to do this. Yeah.
But how would one get in touch with, I suppose you would have to talk to like the gate agents and like try to get them to send a message to the cockpit, but you're panicked.
Okay, so here's my pitch on how to turn this into like a story that could sustain itself for like a little bit more time.
What, we're not making a hilarious YouTube short?
We're making a Vine.
Right, in which case the work is already done because the GIF exists.
Yeah, at this point we just like sit back and just like play it a couple of like 100 times relax.
Well, I mean, those are those YouTube videos of like thing goes on for 10 hours.
Yeah.
This could do that, but anyway, what is your actual idea?
So my actual idea is like, this is someone who is, for some reason, impersonating a pilot. Like someone that, like, I don't know, maybe he's like a con man, or he's like on the run from the law.
Sure.
Or someone is, I don't know, like blackmailing him into doing something.
Right, sort of shut up and dance style.
And it's one of those, like, he just needs to get into this cockpit. And because he is told, like, you need to retrieve something that's there. Maybe even you need to fly this plane.
Yeah.
And so then the movie is kind of this, like, suspense story. And it could even be sort of a, like, quasi-comedic one of kind of this guy that is just, like, one day has to kind of, like, dress up as a pilot and see how the heck he can get to, like, the cockpit. And so then it's like, you know, he gets to the airport and someone is like, oh, like, where's your, like, operator's license? And he has to kind of, you know,
talk his way
past that. Sort of, you know, bluff his way through, like, oh, I left it in the lounge. And they're like, which lounge?
The American one?
Right. And they're like, oh, yeah. Someone was just saying that they'd found, like, someone's wallet there. Woo! And so, you know, like, they make it past the first checkpoint. And then, you know.
That's interesting. That's better than, my mind sort of went to like a Jack Bauer kind of a place of like pilot is.
Oh, this guy can be played by Kiefer Sutherland. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
No, but like I would love to see Kiefer Sutherland do something a little bit more comedic. But anyway.
Yeah. He's got great timing.
He does have great timing. Yeah. But that like this is a ordinary pilot who is forced into an extraordinary circumstance of having to like stop someone who's impersonating him.
Mm.
And like, you know, he gets to every checkpoint and they're like, we saw you 5 minutes ago.
That's good. Yeah. That's funny. Right. And it's like, I need to get into flight deck. You're already in the flight deck.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, no. Like that's like some real like Invasion of the Body Snatchers type shit.
Right. And I think that like,
and it's like, what is the doppelganger going to do with the plane?
What does the doppelganger want
like,
with the plane?
He can't let that plane take off.
No.
Yeah.
And like, no one, you know, no one would believe him because this person looks identical
right,
to him.
Right, no, and like they got all the like, they got all the like rights, the operator's license and like this ID, they've got everything. So, you know, maybe like the entire like airport has already been indoctrinated and he just needs to kind of do something.
I thought I saw this movie and it had Arnold Schwarzenegger in it and there were...
Yeah.
Yeah, what is that movie called?
It's not Total Recall.
No, it was the clone one from the
90s,
2000s.
This is also perilously close to Face Off.
Yeah.
But we'll leave that alone.
Yes, it is a little close to Face Off. End of Days, something like that, is it called? I don't know. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
This is an important problem that we should solve.
Right.
No, but I think that like both of these ideas would be really fun and I'm down for either.
Right. And like the thing that like my mind goes to is if you're trying to climb in through an airport's window, you're trying to get someone's attention.
Yes.
Like you're trying to draw attention to something.
Or you're just like or you are panicked.
Yeah. Like if this guy has a job tomorrow, I'll be shocked. Shocked, I say.
There is like a shortage of airline pilots, though. He may still have a job.
Wild.
Yeah, it's a tough job.
It is. I was actually talking to someone when I was back home over the holidays who has a commercial pilot's license but has not been flying for a really long time, and was talking about maybe getting back into it, because like during the recession, they made it really, really hard to sort of pay for courses and like get the flight hours that you need. And so now that they're now there's like a shortfall.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, I think you're right that this is someone who either is just sort of running on pure adrenaline or really, really, really wants like the transit police to come ground this plane.
Right. Like I'm just thinking about like there's a scene in North by Northwest, the Hitchcock movie, where Cary Grant is at this art auction surrounded by the bad guy and like all the bad guy's goons are there.
Right. But also just like polite society.
Also just polite society. And there's this moment where like, you know, the bad guy kind of goes like, goons, take Cary Grant and dispose of him. And you're like, oh, shit, because, like, you know, the bad guys are closing in and they're going to, like, drag him off. And
they're just going to,
who knows what.
They're just going to, like, sort of manhandle him out and no one else will do anything because it's this auction.
And he sort of has this, like, brilliant idea of, oh, shit, like, I'm going to do a ruckus. I'm going to become sort of, like, loud
disruptive.
And disorderly and destructive. And eventually, like, the auction people are going to be forced to be like, police, remove this man. And so it's kind of like getting arrested is the hack of, like, not falling into the hands of the people that are
like,
actually going to
kill
him.
The goons would kill him. The police take him to jail.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I feel that there has to be some, that there needs to be something like this of, like, you know, this pilot is being pursued by someone. And it's sort of this, like, I can't just try to run away. Like, I need to do something that will get me escorted out of the airport by the TSA or by whoever the London equivalent of the TSA is.
Right. Like I,
in my mind, the Buckingham Palace guards show up and drag him off.
No, and the like beef eater.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, and the truncheons and everything. Yeah, no, where like falling into the hands of the British police is the win.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of like in the way that for a moment in Fight Club, going to the police seems like a great idea.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that the police are also indoctrinated into like the bigger system.
The movie came out when, Zach?
I know.
1999.
Yeah. It's going to be 20 years
old this year. If you are listening to this show and you are younger than Fight Club, hi, you make us feel old.
We love you, but you make us
also
feel old.
Also watch Fight Club.
It's great. Unless you're under 18, that movie's rated R.
Yeah,
don't
do that.
Don't do that.
Great.
So
about
like that 2-year window.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking to you. Feel special.
I'm so sorry, everyone of all ages.
Everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. No, just like a blanket apology.
Just apology.
Just like we're sorry for the last minute or so of this show.
So, okay. If this
but
is going to be
back on track.
Sort of like a Roger Thornhill, which is Cary Grant's character's name in North by Northwest.
Thornhill, I was trying to remember that, yeah.
So a Thornhill-esque adventure.
Indeed.
A Thorny-esque adventure.
Okay.
So yes, it's a thorny situation.
Yeah. I was so close.
Please. Continue.
No, it's your fault. It's
no,
your
I'm
job.
Sorry.
You're so stupid.
Please, Sarah, please take us away from this.
No, I need to fix it.
No. So if this is going to be sort of a like civilian put into a spy
conspiracy,
like very national security-esque situation. I suppose we should decide if he is actually a pilot or just like dressed up as one for reasons of blackmail.
Mm-hmm.
Or trying to get away from bad guys. And like, what is the bad guys? Like, we should maybe figure out like sort of how much of a civilian he is and what the bad guys want with the plane.
Mm-hmm. And see, and this is one of those situations where in my mind, this is one of these cases where the truth really is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
Because if I was watching a film and the film was, here is this established career airline pilot that knows what's up and is not currently under the influence of strong drugs, And they had to get into this airplane cockpit, and they chose this particular method of doing so, I would be like, no movie, no, there is no way that this would ever happen.
Yeah.
And even if it did, this is not what this man would do. There is no way. The verisimilitude has been broken. Except apparently we live in a world where that happens because the world is broken. So I am a little bit more about this is someone that has somehow found themselves in the position of having to like pretend to be an airline pilot. And at a certain point, somebody turns to him and they're like, Joe, are you in hours? And he's like, I have no idea what an hours means. So he's like, yes, I am. Could you take the like AR-15? And he's like, that's a rifle, isn't it?
AR-15 is a rifle.
Yeah. They're like, could you take like the T-942? And he's like,
yes.
I also don't know what that is. So yes. And it's like, great. Show up at gate, whatever. And this time, and then he shows up there. And it's like, oh shit. Apparently I just agreed to fly a plane. They're like, all right, just like get into the cockpit and we can get started. He's like, cool. And in my mind, this character is now played less by Kiefer Sutherland and more by like Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, no, now we are in Mr. Bean territory.
Right. And you just like show
him.
And like
him. He obviously doesn't know the code to get past the bulletproof door. So he's just like, excuse me, I've left something outside. Right. And just like wanders back out.
Oh man!
Right, but after like a like good 5 minute sequence of like him v the door,
right,
where he's just like trying it one way, trying it another way. He's like, "Is this a pull? Is this a push?" Like,
Zach, how much time do we have?
Oh, that's a good question.
Just like, what's the code?
15 minutes.
Oh, we have plenty of time for me to ask who's the younger Mr. Bean now.
That's a very, very, very good question. You know, and like, at a certain point in the 90s, there were a couple of like good pretenders to the throne.
Yeah, but really not lately, though.
No. Give me a second. You know, we've kind of weirdly, I sort of think about like the comedy people today are like weirdly a little bit more in like the cerebral category. Like I'm thinking about like the Key and Peele's or the like Britannics of the world.
And even like your Jonah Hill's and your Seth Rogen's are doing sort of more mixed work.
Yeah. Simon Pegg could play
could
this.
Do it, but I don't know that he'd be interested in that.
No.
Yeah.
It would be very fun to watch him do it, though.
Yeah, yes. Him or Nick Frost, really.
Yes. Andy Samberg.
Oh, perfect. Done and done.
Yeah.
No, that'd be great.
And like, it would be a good like challenge for someone like him of like, you need to keep your mouth shut and just kind of like
react.
Work the physicality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's good at physical stuff in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Yeah.
Love me a good Samberg. But yeah, but the question then is like, why the heck is Andy Samberg
impersonating a pilot
in the first place?
So, and we've landed on the more comedic route and the less intense.
I guess so. That all like right. This is gonna be less of a, I mean, Andy Samberg could still have an evil twin, whatever, but like I think we're,
oh, but if Andy Samberg has an evil twin, it's a fun evil twin. Like, it's a fun evil twin.
Yeah. But like I think we are, whatever the how I'm moving away from bad people want the plane to do bad things and more towards like Andy Samberg is running away from consequences, finds a pilot uniform in the hotel room that he's snuck into.
Yeah.
And then, you know, runs to the airport to try and get away from whoever is chasing him and ends up unwittingly agreeing to flying a plane.
Right. Like, I'm just kind of like, so I remember a couple of years ago, one of my favorite comedies of recent years is the Aardman movie about Shaun the Sheep.
Yeah.
Which was really, really good, like little charming kids movie that had like a ton of great visual jokes.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite jokes is that there's the sequence where this dog is, his master has been like taken into a hospital and the dog is just like, shit, I need to get my master out of the hospital. And so he tries to go in and they're like, no dogs allowed. And he gets kicked out. And so then he tries on a disguise. And the disguise is hilariously bad. And so everyone is like, no, you're still clearly that dog that we kicked out. Get out of here. And the genius thing is that the next thing that he tries is a different disguise, which this time is hilariously good. Like, there's this point where, like, he comes in dressed as a doctor and everybody takes him so seriously as a doctor that very quickly he can't
test. It's in over his head, yeah.
Right, like, he can't have, like, free movement around the hospital anymore because people are like, we need a thoracic surgeon who is, like, available. And the dog is just kind of like, shit, I don't actually have the equipment to say that I'm not available. I'm a dog. I can't speak. And they're like, great, come this way, doctor. And so I feel that like it needs to sort of be something like that. Of like he's trying to, for some reason, infiltrate the hospital. Or the airport.
Yeah. No, he's trying to meet someone at the airport, or he's trying to get away from goons that want his money at the airport. Because like airports are so secure, right?
Right. And it can be something like, I don't know, like he was... like he's like a 2-bit thief.
Sure.
And he discovers that like someone left like a big stash of money in like the foundations of this construction site that later on became this airport. And so he's just kind of like, if I can just like get in.
Yeah.
Like
and like have better freedom of movement. Than
right, exactly. Like I need to be able to get into like the backstage of the airport. Yeah. I would be able to like get that money and like at long last I can stop like ripping people off in Central Park or whatever.
Or whatever. And it could be sort of like a rat race kind of thing where like he is
right, like there's like three different criminals three or different something groups. That are all going for it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, him, Andre Brower and Stephanie Beatrice are because they're all
because
on Brooklyn
Nine-Nine is on your mind.
No, they're all like trying to find this money at the same name.
Right, and like one of them is like tunneling into the airport, like, and it's all like underground in the sewers. And Andy Samberg is like, chumps, like I'll show you guys.
I'll
like,
just walk right in.
This is how the professionals do it. And then it's like, we need a pilot, and he's like, that's not how the professionals do it at all. This is not professional.
Right. In that case, I feel like that he's not sneaking into the plane. He's trying to sneak out of the plane before that he has to fly.
Yeah. No, like, that's I think that it's very much kind of one of those, like, he's just trying to get somewhere in the airport and then gets pulled into having to manage a plane. And he's just not properly equipped to extricate himself out of that situation.
Not gracefully, no.
Without just being like, so, funny story, I'm actually not a pilot. I am doing this way illegal thing right now, and you've caught me, and I would really like to leave now. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah.
And so he's just kind of like, all right, well, we need to get into this plane, and we'll solve the problem of what happens after I get into this plane once I'm inside the plane.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, what the third person is doing to get into the airport.
I mean, maybe impersonating someone not a pilot.
Sure.
Like a ground crew or something.
Hmm.
Especially if, like, there's tunnels involved and, like, the point is, like, access to the tarmac.
Right.
Yeah. And, yeah, it could be that, like, it would be funny because there are so many airports in London. If like they think it's buried in the foundations of Gatwick, but actually it's Heathrow, and like
right,
this is sort of a multi thing.
No. Like this is what it is.
Hmm.
So like the three of them are like in a thief gang together.
Oh sure.
And they think that it's in Gatwick, and then when they get to like the place where they need to get in Gatwick, they find out that that's the wrong airport, and therefore it has to be in Heathrow.
Right.
And they get into this huge fight about it and break up over the fact that like one of them got it wrong.
Yeah.
And so then now it's like each one of them being like, I'll show you guys. Right. Like I'm better. I can do this all on my own.
I really like that. It's just like, and they all have very strong philosophies about how to steal.
Right.
And it's a test of like which one works better. And then obviously, you know, they have to come together to finally get the money.
Exactly.
And like all of their styles do mesh.
Yes.
And sort of they learn the value of listening to each other to steal better, I guess.
Right. All the better to like rip off the airport money with. Or, oh,
7 minutes, 48 seconds.
Okay, great.
Oh,
but
cool.
Like,
no, I mean, but we're getting somewhere.
We are getting somewhere.
And maybe there's like I like that there's sort of this internal competition and like pressure. I also think it would be good to have sort of an external factor that isn't just like the Bobbies or whatever.
Yeah. No, like, like there might be like
Interpol.
Interpol?
It's after them.
I mean,
well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, aside from the police, law enforcement,
like you're thinking of, like, there's like a rival criminal gang that is like going after the money at the same time,
or like they're doing this because they owe a bunch of money to someone scary or something like
right.
that.
Like each one of them has something that they love,
that they need the money
put at stake.
Or something.
Yeah.
Like one of their dogs is being held captive, and one of their kids is being held captive, and one of their
a lot of captives.
Man, whoever these guys are, those like drug busting dogs at Heathrow are gonna go nuts the moment that they get around. Like, is this gonna be like, excuse me, Mr. Pilot, why is this dog like, you know, like really barking at you? I don't know, dogs just love me.
I'm a dog person. Is not a dog person. Has previously in the film gone on a rant about why dogs are the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like some sort of, either that or like some sort of time pressure. Like they have to do this within 48 hours or something like that. Just so that it, you know, it feels a little bit, what?
So it's the last day of operations at like the old airport. It can't be Heathrow.
Fitton or whatever it is.
Yeah. Because they're opening like the new brand new building.
Right.
And this is the last day that it's available, that it's open. And then like the next day it's getting blown up. It's getting demolished.
Right.
So like if they don't get the money out by like,
then it just explodes.
Exactly. Yeah. Then it's just gone.
All right. I'm here for that.
I am here for that as well. That's a good solution.
Yeah. No, and one of them like has a connect with like the demolitions crew and like they think it's going to be chill to do it like the night before the last day, but they don't find it, and so now they have like 24 hours to find out where this money actually is.
Exactly. What is the third person doing? So like we had like one person we're gonna be like tunneling in and like we're just gonna like, you know, get this
right. I haven't heard a computer person. I'm just saying. I haven't heard the hacker character.
Yeah, but like finding money, I guess they could like be a drone operator and like be doing like scans from a distance or something like that.
Well, and also just like, you know, like we need this door to be unlocked.
Is assuming that they're working in tandem. Like when they're all operating separate cons.
Sure,
like,
sure.
What is this person's skill? Because we've got an impersonator, we have a tunneler.
I don't want there to be one that is just like pulls out the AR-15, you know, like hands in the air. This is a really ill-advised hold up.
No muscle.
No, that's why I like the person who's just like, you know, they've got their Chromebook and they just start typing and like all of a sudden the door opens and they just like slowly back into it.
Sure.
And they're in the executive lounge where there's a, you know, secure panel to get to the, you know, the wiring system.
Sure.
I don't hate it either.
It's just like tough in airports where there are so many people.
Yeah.
And you're like interfacing with security and like, But it's a good thought.
Alternatively, it could be like someone where the strategy is like get themselves arrested and taken to like the secure room.
Sure.
And then like, you know, break out.
And then break out of the secure room.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The contortionist.
Right.
Well, that's the other thing that's just like air ducts.
Right.
Yeah. But do we want to have like someone that is like tunneling in and then like another person that's like crawling through the air ducts?
That's
like,
true.
That's very similar.
That's a little close. Yeah.
I mean, you could have someone who is just sort of like parkouring around. Like they don't break in, like they're not tunneling, they're not trying to walk into the airport. They're like climbing a fence and like dodging planes.
Oh, sure.
Martial arts specialist. My mind just flashed to Kiss of the Dragon, if you guys ever saw that.
No.
I believe, I forget who's in it, but it was just like, they have this little bracelet where they have these little darts that they throw, and they're like basically acupuncture.
Uh-huh.
And you can do everything with it. They're just like,
it's magic.
Amazing. Like, if you throw them this way, all of a sudden the person's stunned. If you throw them this way, the person, you know, it's just
Yeah.
I'm just imagining somebody who's just like slowly like walking around the airport just like immobilizing all the security with little needles.
I think that would pair nicely with get yourself arrested. Like, just being like, hello, TSA. Bums, 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 terrorism.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Oh, man.
Okay, wait. Alternate setup pitch.
Okay.
That is totally original.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Okay, so... These three guys, not actually a gang, they actually all hate each other. Mm-hmm. Like, they're deathly rivals. And they all know that this guy, this other person outside of the gang, or not a, like, they're not a gang anymore. They're all three individual people. They know that this other dude, who is independent from all of them, has information about where money is buried at Heathrow.
Right.
And so they all get to him, but they get to him at different times, at different ways. And so they all learn a little bit about where the money is hidden, but none of them has all the information. And so this other guy, we could call him anything. Let's call him Arch Stanton, just to call him something.
Is
suddenly like incapacitated. Perhaps he dies. And so now the three thieves all have to kind of like work together, but they're all waiting for the moment when they can just like, you know,
what are we stealing from?
This is the good, the bad, and the ugly.
The ugly. Like,
comedy airport edition.
1 minute, 30 seconds.
Oh.
Because then instead of just having, then you can kind of have a little bit more flexibility with what the thieves are doing and like who is where, when.
Right. The only thing that would make the Ecstasy of Gold sequence better is like oncoming airplanes.
Oh, I was thinking like those like baggage carousels. Oh, yeah.
Hell yes.
Like have it in one of those like crazy rooms that they have backstage. Like
with all of the
conveyor belts, and they're like running around all the different platforms, and there's bags coming all different ways.
I want this movie.
One upping Toy Story 2.
Exactly. Yeah.
Andy Samberg, call us.
I'm fine either way.
Yeah, I think that like a comedy version of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly set in an airport with Andy Samberg and thieves is exactly what the world needs in 2019. So we can make it happen.
And that's time.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
That was fun, Zach.
Yeah, that was a good.
Thank you.
I cannot believe where you guys took that idea.
Neither can I.
I'm also still back at like, if this idea happened in a movie, I would like throw my popcorn to the ground and just be like, nope, this is now
the
like
the stupidest pilot ever. It's too silly.
Yeah, I can't deal with it.
Damn.
So,
we tried.
The world, it's stranger than the fiction.
Well, we'll come back after a short break.
All right, you guys, we're going to break into the show just for a moment to do some very, very, very quick announcements. First of all, thank you all so much if you have reviewed No Bad Ideas or if you have left us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Real talk, guys, like so many people have found this show, and that is thanks to all of you and like the amazing job that you have done spreading the news about the show, spreading the gospel of
really,
No Bad Ideas.
That's
really
warms. Writing a check. But
it warms our hearts.
But seriously, the reviews are wonderful. We get so much joy out of reading them, and the ratings and reviews really help more people find the show. So we really appreciate you taking the time. It really can happen in under a minute to do that and to share the show with your friends. It means a lot.
Also, and it makes a huge difference.
Also, offline, we've noticed that the subscriber number is going up, and you know, as much as rating and reviews make a huge difference, I assume some of you are sharing in real life to your real life human friends and family, and that makes a big difference as well too.
Yeah.
So thank you.
And you know, we currently do not have a marketing budget for the show. We're not running ads anywhere. We're not, printing brochures and handing them out in the streets of Manhattan. So
we're not spray painting buildings with
bribing critics. Definitely not doing
that. Yeah, no. That's next year. Next year. but no, really, it is so wonderful to feel the support and the love. And if you want to support and love us, Apple Podcasts, rate and review, tell your friends,
third option,
if you want to be the most extra, you could even help us make the show, like actually help us be in this studio recording as much as possible and make the show as awesome as it could be. How can you do that, you ask? Well, by becoming a recurring donor to No Bad Ideas on Patreon.com. You just sign up, create an account, and then whatever amount you feel is right, whatever you're comfortable with, even if it's just a dollar per episode, you can sign up to give us that every month.
And if you give us as much as $3 per episode or more, you're going to get a mini extra episode every single week with a No Bad Idea Blitz.
That's right.
Edition
where we only have five minutes.
It's the same game from the first half of the show, but it is faster. That much more insane.
But faster and more panicked.
But faster. Isn't that a bad idea, Gabriel?
You'll have to tune in to find out. Yeah.
You have to specifically sign up on Patreon. And for those of you who have done that, thank you so, so much. It really is what's keeping us going with making this show.
No, really. It is what is letting us make this show right now. Yeah. Like, we are all very busy, very dependent on freelance work people. And the fact that we have like that little bit of support is what lets us carve out the time each week to make this show.
So if you'd like more things, more No Bad Ideas, more things from the three of us.
More ambitious versions of this.
Yeah.
More ambitious other projects from this. Like,
the Patreon is the place to go to make that happen.
And how does one get to the Patreon, remind me?
Well, you can go on to nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
I'm so sorry, Zach. I had something in my ear for one moment. Could you repeat that?
Oh, yes. nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
You just type that support. In. No Shatnerian pauses. That's just right. nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
That is correct. Sarah Shackett.
And just one last thing, and then we're going to get back to the show. And that is that the three of us are actually hard at work on a new thing right now.
Yeah.
And that is, we are putting together our first online course. And it's all about audio drama storytelling, all about how do you tell stories when you don't have any visuals and when you're doing it all through words and spoken dialogue and sound effects and music.
Oh my God, it's so extra, you guys.
It's kind of everything that we learned making Wolf 359 and Time Bombs, but in like actual class form.
Yes.
We are going to have it out and available for consumption really, really soon.
It's coming together. But if you would like to learn more about it, and so that you are the first to know when it is finally out in the world, where should you go, Gabriel?
You can go to course.fearofpublicshame.com. That is course.fearofpublicshame.com.
And right there, you'll be able to sign up for our newsletter. We'll send you email updates as soon as there are updates to be had.
Right, welcome back to No Bad Ideas and to the back half of the show, which is the, you know, slightly more unstructured, more free form, just kind of a chance for us to talk about creativity and writing and
whatever's
going on in our lives,
on our minds, and just check in with each other and
woo.
Yeah,
I think. And party.
And this week, what's been on our minds is a question actually that we got from the Twitter sphere.
We got just a bunch of questions on Twitter, y'all, and you should keep them coming because they're wonderful.
Yeah, and they really help us to kind of bubble up things that we're actually already thinking about, but which are sometimes tough to articulate.
So usually this goes the other way, but you can actually add us at Fear the Shame with questions that you have about creativity or writing or really anything at all.
That's right.
And we will answer them or not. But
we are so changeable like that.
Yeah, we're mercurial.
Again, just again, that's Fear the Shame on Twitter.
Yes.
Yes.
With an at but we sign we had a it. We had a question that was asking us about how we determine that there's enough substance to an idea to allow it to move forward. How do you sort of look at an idea that you have and decide, yeah, there's enough there.
I'm going to work on this.
Yeah.
I'm going to devote a part of my young life to making this happen.
Yeah. Or just, you know,
of
maybe all of the ideas in your notebook, if you are someone who jots down a bunch of ideas, which one is like worth spending a little bit more time on?
Yeah, and I think that like we all kind of like look at this and we all sort of do a little bit of a like sound, because
right.
There is a certain amount of this.
That's just intuitive.
Right. Like, yeah. There is a certain amount of this that is a little bit like the old saying about pornography.
You know it when you see
you
it.
You know it when you see it.
I was just thinking about that for that exact reason, because it's like there is that gut feeling of when something is substantial enough. And I feel like the thing that you were just saying, of like, how do I know what to spend time on? I feel like most of that time is spent fishing for something that feels substantive enough.
And you know, and I think that like what complicates matters too is that there is, so there are some things that are just bad ideas.
Yeah.
That you hear that and you're kind of like, meh, I don't care. Like, I don't want to hear anything more about that story. And then there are things that you hear that are good ideas and you're like, yes, that is a good story.
Yeah.
That is an, there's something there. But weirdly, there are some good stories or some good ideas that at least I find that just kind of hearing the story concept or just kind of hearing the general idea, I'm kind of like, cool, I'm good. I honestly got 90% of what I'm going to get out of watching that movie from just hearing about the concept. And so just because something sort of feels like in some way like, oh, this is good. There's something compelling here. There's something
interesting
yeah. here. It doesn't always make you go, and we need to go make this right now.
Yeah, there are some things I find that, you know, you, like you said, you're sort of done with them after you hear them, or it feels like it is an interesting concept, but if you explored it further, it actually might ruin the
yeah.
interest, or you know, that you'd be in danger of over explaining or like overstretching the length of the idea.
Yeah.
And you know, we come up with things all the time on this show and otherwise. There's just like, oh, we talked about this a little bit last week, is just, this would be a really great movie, or this is a cool idea, but it's not enough to be like a movie, you know?
Right. Like, you know, like last week we were throwing ideas around about, you know, some guy that's on a deadline and needs to write something really quickly. And as much as we all sort of find what we kind of came up with as a way of structuring that, kind of like, oh, that's fun and compelling and interesting, I don't think that any of us have really spent any time between now and then thinking about it, or just kind of going like, ah, I need to write that script about
right.
that guy.
Whereas like of those ideas, like the boy who becomes a pirate king, like I still think could be pretty cool.
Right.
But like also I did not spend the weekend outlining that or anything.
Sure.
Right.
So I think it comes down to a lot of it is just excitement. Like what do you have and then just won't let you be, you know?
Yeah. And there's, God, I feel that like a lot of this discussion is going to be trying to sort of articulate things that are going to sound like fairly nebulous. So like bear with us a little bit, audience.
Right. We're working this out in real time.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but I feel like one of the things that's popping up in mind is this idea of essentialism, where, you know, it's the disciplined pursuit of less but better.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a book about it a while ago that was a little popular. And I feel like most of my notebook are those kind of ideas where it's like, that is an idea that could work.
Yes.
And it is exciting for the fact that it could work and it was an idea that is mine. But does that mean it's something that I should bang my head against a keyboard for 6 months?
Sure.
6 years, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And
like 6 months to get to like the first point of it being a viable thing, even, plus then however much longer until you're really done with it.
Right. And I don't know, like I'm in a situation right now where more than like, oh, does this idea feel substantial, is more like, these are the things that I want to do, and what's an idea that I can sort of create an excuse to do these things.
Yeah, so you're like reverse
together.
Engineering things.
And it's not going well.
Sure.
It's frustrating because there's like like something there, but it feels insubstantial, or there's not that foundation that you can really build on.
Hmm.
In a way that, you know, the sort of like romantic story of like, oh, you know, had the like the seed for Wolf out of listening to that episode of
Radiolab,
where you just had the picture of somebody floating alone in space, and it just gave you the base reality to build off of.
And luckily you were in a place where like you could take that seriously. I've found that sometimes, you know, you'll have ideas and you'll just be like, eh.
Man. Yeah.
And how much of it is pushing through that? Like, is that like a gag reflex on ideas that is worth pushing through? Or is that like a good barometer to listen to for how to avoid time sucks?
I think it depends on the person. I think.
How about for you?
I think for me, I tend to sort of have a baseline level of skepticism. That I should probably relax a little
skepticism
bit.
Skepticism towards the ideas.
Towards
like
ideas.
I'm just kind of going like,
yeah, that's a nice thought.
You have
kid.
Like an overactive immune system
a
against
bit.
Your ideas?
Yeah.
Huh.
I feel like I choke a lot of things before they can take a breath.
I have the opposite problem, Sarah. It's killing me.
Oh, buddy. And they're both problems, right?
Yeah, I'm just like, addicted to starting things, and then, you know, they need finishing, and then they
and it's tough, and I really genuinely think that, like, it's the thing, you sort of have to be able to catch yourself noticing that you're thinking about something, you know, on a Tuesday while you're getting groceries. Like,
or, yeah.
Yeah, like, you have to sort of be aware enough of yourself to realize, okay, this thing isn't leaving me alone, and so I should attend to it.
So I'm going to say the thing that I think is like half the audience is going to get very nervous mm-hmm. about the state of affairs inside my mind, and half the audience is going to go, yeah, no, I totally get it. Because I found that like certain writers really work this way and certain writers don't work this way at all.
My Mr. Burn hands are going for this.
Yes, he is doing some very serious steepling right now.
Mm.
no, but like in my experience, there is a point at which, so you come up with an idea and like you have a setting and you have an idea in your head, you got some characters, and you keep pouring energy and time into it, and you keep sort of trying to imagine, well, what if they're over here? What if they're over there? What if the whole thing is set in 1920s Chicago? What if the guy has a really cool hat and you're just kind of arranging things and moving things around and being like, does this guy feel more like a Mike or more like a Jeremy or more like a Barbara? I'm trying to just like figure it all out and just get the pieces to fit together. And when you do that long enough, certain ideas start to talk back to you. Like certain ideas
absolutely
start to kind of go, no, like I'm Jeremy. Like that is just like who I am. And even sometimes you as a writer are kind of going like, but if I call you, I don't know, if I call you John, then I've got this like cool, like 12 disciples thing going. And the character is just kind of like, but I'm not John, I'm Jeremy. And you're kind of like, huh? Well, damn, I guess he's just Jeremy. And that is usually the point at which I'm like, oh, I'm looking at it and I'm recognizing it as pornography.
Yeah.
That is the point at which it's sort of like, oh, now it feels.
It's either that or when you can start making jokes to the characters or like jokes about the world in a way that like would make sense to the people in this universe that I'm like, oh, okay, this is a real place.
Right. And it sort of switches from a thing that you are creating into a thing that you are discovering.
Mm.
That is usually for me when it's like, okay, this is worth excavating. Although hilariously, sometimes you get to that point and you sort of go, oh, this is not a fossil for me. This is something for another writer. And sometimes you pick up the phone and you kind of go like, hey, you know, friend of mine that is also a writer, I think I found this thing and I think that it might actually be more of a you thing than a me thing.
Huh.
But yeah, but every now and then you kind of go like,
this would be so cool. I am not the person.
Yeah,
to
like
do it. Yeah.
I don't have a perspective on this. I don't have a thing to say here. I don't have a grasp on this. I would be kind of hanging on for dear life to where this wants to go in a way that it would not actually be productive to the Enterprise. But it's kind of that point where the characters start talking, the characters start to making decisions in your brain, and you're half making those decisions for them and half just kind of seeing them make the decisions.
Yeah.
That is when I kind of go like, oh, there's something here. And what's frustrating is that for me, that doesn't happen instantly. That usually happens after like a couple of months of work. So there's no really easy way of kind of going like, oh, this is an idea that seems like it might have potential. But no. You often have to kind of like do the work and then kind of go like, never mind. This is not actually singing for me. I feel that a lot of 2018 was spent developing things before they got to the point of like, this is not talking back to me.
You know what,
though?
This
is not there.
As someone who looked at a lot of things that weren't talking back to you.
Yeah.
It all comes back when you find the thing.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
Like, no work is ever wasted.
No.
And like, things that you are working out to try and solve an unsolvable problem will be like muscle that you have to go solve a problem that you can solve in the world.
Absolutely.
Where you can solve it.
Absolutely.
And yes. This sounds like it's arriving us a little bit at the Anne Lamott mantra of like show up and do the work, like do it bird by bird, like put the words after the previous word. And
yeah.
Like, don't worry about like, oh, like, no, I'm not having ideas that are worth developing.
Yeah, that's a death knell, is like to sort of psych yourself out of ideas, just to sort of be like, this is something that I struggle with a lot, of just like having an idea and just going like, eh, no, that's dumb. Or like, eh, no,
it's
that's
been done. Yeah.
That's the killer. Mm. You know, explore it. See if you can find characters or find a conflict that is of interest to you. And try not to psych yourself out. And usually, even if it becomes something that like is better for another writer or is something that you ultimately step away from, that experience and that thinking will inform the idea that you have next that may work out.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, put things on the shelf. Like, don't throw things away. You'd be shocked at like what you thought was just like destined for the garbage bin. You might sort of then kind of like later, and I mean like years later, kind of go like, oh, hang on a second. Like, this fits really nicely over here. And like, this character actually has like a nice home over here. And like, this can kind of like, you know, give this a particular perspective over here. So I think that there's just like a lot of trusting that your brain is going to get to a good place once you like put in enough work and once you give it enough time, and that every bad idea is just an important piece of preparation for the good idea that is bubbling up. And that's, of course, very tough when, you know, you want to establish yourself as a writer and you want to build a career in this and you
feel like you should be writing something every day and moving towards that place of being established. And that only contributes to, you know, the sort of preciousness that you can have around ideas.
And the more time that you're not having ideas, the harder it is to find the time to devote to it. The more you're building up other responsibilities, the more you're kind of having your focus pulled by other things. And I am sorry, listeners, if you think that I'm building up to a great, like, and the solution to all of that is X.
Because all there is problems.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
I,
no.
This is, I think,
the solution
something that we
is that sometimes you're just sad and you feel bad.
New episode title.
Hey.
I
still like the clumsy pilot. No, but sometimes you are that person who is kind of trying to squeeze your way into a plane and it doesn't work.
Yes. No, and like,
wow,
and like,
circle.
If you keep trying to write long enough, you will have those terrible moments when you are trying to squeeze your way into a plane and kind of loudly proclaiming as you do it, this is a good idea, this is a good idea. And then the next day you're kind of looking back and just being
that
like,
was
that was
terrible,
a terrible idea.
What was I thinking?
Yeah. But sometimes you just need to kind of feel the adrenaline rush of kind of like, I've made something good. I've made something of substance. I've made something that was like real and together.
Yeah.
I think that mercifully, when we were writing Wolf 359, where we did 61 full scripts plus about three dozen mini episodes and
then the specials.
Mercifully, thank the Lord or whoever is out there listening, even if it's just like atheismo, thank whoever is out there. We only ever had to fully throw out one script and start over.
No, there were always usually something that could be salvaged. And we did have to do like a couple really significant overhauls.
Yes, there were definitely some like page three rewrites of some scripts. Yes.
And if I'm thinking of the episode that got thrown out, the first draft of the live show.
That is correct.
Not all of it got thrown out, if I remember correctly.
Some of it did get reincorporated, but
I'm just saying enough of it that was fucking awesome, excuse my French, that if I do say so.
Oh my God, he cursed.
On this show?
I know.
This clean, clean podcast.
Episode title.
The titles, they doth runneth over.
Yeah,
you're right. We were able to paste some stuff back in, but yeah. It was, I don't know about you, Gabrielle. I think I was the most terrified I've ever been after that table read.
I mean, that was
we knew
was
that
scary.
Like none of it had worked.
That was a mess in a heroic way.
Yeah, like,
but Variations on a Theme came out of that, right?
No, Variations of a Theme was written before that.
That was written before. There was some of the gag stuff with the tape recorder from the live show was in the original.
Correct.
In the original first script. Yeah. But almost nothing came out of it.
And I think that first script is a really great example of we were really intimidated by something that we were trying to do and which was new, and we were really trying to figure it out. And our brains just needed to feel...
It glommed onto an idea.
Right, and it needed to feel like this is a productive thing. Yeah. This is a good idea. We can hang on to this and we can do it. And it took doing it and then having it read out loud by the actors to kind of realize, like, oh God,
that was really dumb.
We were trying to squeeze into the airplane through the window. And like the door is over there. We don't just need to like walk around to the door.
Right.
But in retrospect, it's that exact thing that you were saying, Zach, of even something like that, where we were like, we need to go back and re-outline, not just like rewrite every page, but we need to re-break this story from the ground
up.
This
is a different story than the one that we came up with.
Even something that was as total a rewrite as that, there were still things from that original draft that informed it and expanded upon it and made it a bigger, fuller story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, we were able to do a little bit of that kind of storytelling later.
Yes.
To an extent.
And the original script of the live show was a much more of an impressionistic, I don't know if
just
avant-garde is correct, but it was a series
like,
of vignettes and episode and stories. And in reality, it was a version of what we later did well with Mission Mishaps, where it was just kind of like, these are different paintings of moments in the Hephaestus history. And the fact that they are kind of happening all over the timeline and that there's a lot of different tones.
Strung together by like the recording dates, but that's kind of all the connective tissue you have.
Yes.
Right.
That was a mature version of what the first draft of the live show was trying to be, but we were not ready.
We were not ready.
But the second draft of the live show rose like a phoenix out of the ashes.
Yeah.
In large part because it had to.
We had no time to hatch that egg. But then Mission Mishaps kind of came out of it even later.
Yeah. No work is ever wasted.
No work is ever wasted. It's true.
So I suppose we're coming down to, is just like, you can't know until you know. So just try and follow ideas as far as they lead you and just be aware that a lot of them won't lead you very far at all.
At a certain point, it is going to feel harder to not work on an idea than to work on an idea. And that is usually when you know that you're on to something. Like that is usually when you kind of like feel
when you feel compelled to it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's something that I think I've been coming to terms with across the spectrum of creative pursuits, is when I'm doing something to be that kind of a person that does a thing,
yeah,
it doesn't go very well.
Yeah.
But when I am doing the thing because I can't stop, it's like that's usually a good sign that I'm on the right track.
Yeah. And that there's something there that is like fitting well both with what your brain needs to express and what the idea can give to you. Future.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.